Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really critical area, understanding and preventing suicide. We've gathered some important material, and our goal really is to go beyond just surface level stuff and pull out some genuinely insightful strategies.
Right, things people can actually use.
Exactly. We want to equip you, the listener, with the ability to maybe recognize when someone might be in distress, how to offer support that actually helps, and how to be that, you know, vital link to professional help if it's needed.
Ultimately, it's about fostering hope, isn't it?
It is, and underscoring that, well, we all kind of have a role to play in preventing these tragedies.
Absolutely, and what's really illuminating, I think, when we dig into this topic, is the idea of a breaking point.
Okay.
You know, often when we hear about suicide, there can be this temptation, maybe, to think of it as individual weakness.
Right, yeah, that comes up a lot.
But the sources we've looked at, they point to something quite different. It's more about intense, often just unbearable suffering that leads someone to feel completely overwhelmed.
So not a character flaw, but a symptom.
Precisely. Thinking about it like a symptom, you know, like a fever indicates an infection, it lets us shift focus away from blaming the person.
Right.
And towards addressing the underlying distress. And that understanding, that's pivotal. It encourages compassion, not judgment.
Which can be such a huge barrier for people.
Exactly. Judgment is often a massive barrier.
Okay, so let's really dig into that first crucial step then. Recognizing the warning signs. It's more than just a checklist, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's about tuning into changes in someone's whole being, their whole presentation.
Right.
And on the verbal front, well, it might seem obvious, but any mention of wanting to die or feeling like a burden, you know, those sorts of comments, they have to be taken with the utmost seriousness.
They're not just throwaway lines.
Not at all.
Yeah.
They often represent really deep pain, maybe even a cry for help, whether conscious or not.
And it's not just what's being said, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned the whole being so shifts in behavior, too.
Yes, absolutely. We need to be just as attuned to those. Things like someone who usually loves hanging out with friends, suddenly withdrawing, pulling back from family, from activities they once really enjoyed. That kind of isolation can be a really significant shift.
A powerful indicator, yeah.
Definitely. And when we're thinking about those behavioral changes, it's also worth noting disruptions in, like, basic patterns, sleep and appetite.
Oh, right. Too much or too little.
Exactly. Significant, sustained changes.
Mm-hmm.
Sleeping way more or way less, eating much more or hardly at all, that often signals an underlying struggle. Something's off.
Now, here's something that can feel particularly concerning. When we see actions that sort of suggest someone might be preparing to leave.
Mm.
I mean, things like giving away possessions, things that really mean something to them.
Right. Prized possessions.
Yeah. Or making arrangements, like sorting out finances or saying goodbyes almost as if they won't be around. What's the significance there?
Well, those actions can be deeply distressing to witness because they might indicate a sense of finality, a feeling that maybe there's no turning back in their mind. It suggests they might have moved beyond just thinking about suicide.
To planning.
To potentially planning or preparing, yes. It's a very serious sign.
We also need to be mindful of what are sometimes called maladaptive coping mechanisms, like unhealthy ways people try to deal with intense feelings.
Yeah, like increased use of alcohol or drugs.
Right. Is that like trying to numb the pain?
It often is. It's almost like trying to find a temporary escape, however damaging, from just overwhelming emotional pain.
Makes sense.
And alongside these behavioral shifts, we should also pay close attention to emotional states, changes there.
Like mood swings or something more specific.
It could be things like persistent irritability, you know, someone being unusually short-tempered or agitated, or the expression of really intense feelings of hopelessness or worthlessness. When those negative emotions become really entrenched, really constant, they can create a fertile ground, so to speak, for suicidal thoughts to take root.
It strikes me, though, as we're listing these signs, it can feel a bit like, I don't know, a diagnostic tool. But what if someone's really good at hiding how they feel? The sources mention that, right? Not everyone shows these signs clearly.
It's a really, really crucial point. Some individuals, for all sorts of reasons, become very adept at masking their internal struggles. They put on a brave face.
Right, that I'm fine syndrome.
Exactly. And this is where maybe that gut feeling you might get can be really important.
Trusting your instincts.
Yeah. If you notice a cluster of subtle changes, maybe nothing dramatic on its own, but together, or if something just feels off, with someone you know.
Even if they deny it.
Even if they deny it or aren't showing those obvious signs, it's worth paying attention. This is where active listening, really hearing not just the words, but the feeling behind them and maybe what's not being said.
Mm.
That, coupled with just genuine concern, becomes even more vital.
Okay. So if you do notice signs or you have that gut feeling, something isn't right, what's the crucial next step?
This brings us to the power of asking directly, doesn't it?
It does.
Asking that question. Are you thinking about suicide?
Mm.
There's a real hesitation, I think, for a lot of people around that.
There absolutely is. And that hesitation, it often comes from a very understandable place. You know, fear.
Fear of making it worse.
Yeah, fear of saying the wrong thing, putting the idea in their head somehow.
But the evidence doesn't back that up?
No. What the evidence strongly suggests is that asking directly, clearly and compassionately, does not plant the idea.
Okay.
In fact, it can be an incredibly courageous and, well, life-affirming act. It opens a door. It gives them permission to talk about something they might be desperately trying to hide.
It shows you care enough to ask the hard question.
Exactly. It communicates that you see their pain and you're willing to go there with them.
Right. And then if someone does confide in you, if they say yes, or even if they just open up about intense pain, the way you listen is absolutely critical. It really is. It's about the art, maybe, of non-judgmental listening.
Meaning
we need to resist that urge, which is often quite strong, to jump in with solutions.
To fix it.
Yes. Or to try and minimize what they're feeling. You know, saying things like, oh, you'll get over it, or just try to think positive.
Yeah, that really helps.
It can inadvertently shut down the conversation. It makes the person feel even more isolated, like you don't get it.
So what should we do instead?
Instead, focus on validating their experience, showing you hear them. Simple but really powerful phrases like, I'm so sorry you're going through this.
Acknowledging the pain?
Yes. Or just, I'm here for you. Let them know they're not facing this alone. That connection can be huge.
Now, it's vital to remember, isn't it, that you don't need to be a mental health professional to offer really significant support.
Absolutely not.
But connecting someone with professional help is, well, it's a really crucial action we can all take. What kind of resources should we know about?
Well, the important thing to recognize is that there are dedicated services out there specifically designed to help people in crisis.
Like hotlines.
Exactly. Crisis hotlines, text lines, support groups. They provide immediate and sometimes ongoing support.
Mm.
For instance, in Australia, you've got Lifeline on 131114 and Beyond Blue on 1300224636.
Okay.
These are really invaluable national resources there, offering confidential support and guidance. And they're great examples of the type of resources that are often available in many communities worldwide. You need to look up the local ones for where you are.
Right. So it's worth knowing what's available locally. And it's not just about, like, handing someone a phone number and walking away, is it?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Offering practical assistance can make a massive difference in whether someone actually follows through and reaches out.
How so?
Well, think about it. If someone's feeling completely overwhelmed, even making a phone call can feel like climbing a mountain.
Yeah, I can see that.
So the act of offering to go with them to a doctor's appointment, or even just sitting with them while they make that initial call to a helpline, helping them find the number, that can be incredibly supportive. It removes some of those practical barriers.
It makes a lot of sense.
And encouraging a conversation with their regular doctor, their GP, is always a good starting point too. Doctors can assess the situation and provide referrals to mental health specialists if needed.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about what we can do as individuals one-on-one, but the sources also emphasize building a supportive community, that broader perspective. How does that fit into suicide prevention?
Yeah, that's crucial. If we kind of zoom out to the bigger picture, we see that a really fundamental aspect is reducing the stigma.
The stigma around mental health.
Exactly. The stigma that unfortunately still surrounds mental health challenges and seeking help. We need to foster environments in our families, workplaces, communities, where it's actually normal to talk about this stuff.
Where asking for help is seen as strong, not weak.
Precisely. And promoting mental health literacy within our communities is also key.
Literacy, like understanding it better.
Yeah. The more people understand about mental health conditions, the signs, the treatments, the better equipped they are to recognize when someone's struggling and to know how to offer, you know, appropriate support. Not trying to be a therapist, but just supportive.
So, like, workshops or information in schools and workplaces.
Like that, yeah. Initiatives that raise awareness and provide education. It empowers everyone.
It sounds like even those everyday interactions, you know, the simple acts of kindness can have a sort of ripple effect in this context.
They absolutely can. Cultivating a culture of empathy and connection. It means that even seemingly small gestures, checking in on someone, really listening, offering a kind word, can have a profound impact.
Especially for someone feeling isolated.
Exactly. Feeling seen, heard, and supported, even in small ways, can be a powerful antidote to those feelings of isolation and despair. These small connections build a stronger safety net, you know, within our communities.
It feels really important that we also speak directly, just for a moment, to any listeners who might actually be experiencing suicidal thoughts right now.
Yes, absolutely. If you are listening and you're feeling overwhelmed, maybe feeling like there's no way out, please know this. You are not alone.
Mm.
There is hope. Things really can get better, even when it feels completely impossible to imagine that right now. Please, please reach out.
Talk to someone.
Talk to a trusted friend, a family member, a professional. Connect with one of the resources we've mentioned, or find one local to you. The main thing is, you don't have to carry this pain by yourself. There are people who want to help, and help is available.
That's such a vital message. So as we draw this deep dive to a close, it really comes back to that idea of collective responsibility, doesn't it? And the power of hope.
Precisely. Preventing suicide isn't solely the job of mental health professionals, though they are critical. It's truly a shared responsibility. It rests with all of us.
In our communities, our families, our workplaces.
Everywhere. By breaking down stigma, by fostering understanding, by knowing the signs, and by offering support when we see someone struggling. We can all contribute. We can help build a world where everyone feels safer, valued, and crucially hopeful.
That's a truly important message to end on. We really encourage you, our listeners, to maybe reflect on your own role in this collective effort and how you might make a difference, even a small one, in your own community.
Mm-hmm. Every little bit helps.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.